It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
We'll punch you in the nose for 60 minutes with a relentless competitive attitude.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by the New York Lottery on the Giants mobile app. On Giants.com, I am John Schmelk. Thank you for being with us. We're joined by Lance Medow and Jeff Fiegels today as we continue our off-season position review, where we take a look at the Giants at each position, who are some of the free agents at those positions, and, of course, what it looks like in the draft at that position as well. Guys, how are you? Good afternoon.
Good.
Doing good. Very well.
Yeah.
All right, this is a show I'm sure a lot of fans have been looking forward to because they have been thinking a lot about the wide receiver position for the Giants. But before we get to that, I want to remind everybody you can find the Big Blue Kickoff Live program on our Giants Podcast Network, which is presented by Investors Bank. You can find the archive of this program and all of our shows at Giants.com/podcast, on the Giants mobile app, and on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Okay, guys, let's do our deep dive into wide receivers. First things first, let's take a look at who's on this Giants roster, and then I'll leave it to the two of you to kind of give your opinion on what the Giants have. I think we're pretty clear on what the deal is right now. Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton, they're 1 and 2. They played the most snaps this year by far. Golden Tate was their third most used wide receiver. There is some speculation that for salary cap purposes, he might be let go. That, of course, right now is just speculation, but he could save some money on the cap. Austin Mack, second-year player out of Ohio State. C.J. Board, who dealt with that very scary concussion midseason, managed to get his way back. And then Dante Pettis was the sixth man on the active roster to close the season. A late addition from the 49ers, a quick guy, special teamer, return man, made a nice catch over the middle. I think it was against Dallas, right, late in the year in that final game of the season. Then on the reserve futures list, you have Alex Bachman, Derek Dillon, and Taequann Mizzell. And then two guys that ended the season on injured reserve, Cody Kaur, who was primarily a special teams player, and David Sills, a third-year player, I believe, who's a little bit bigger, not so fast. He was on injured reserve, I think, either with a foot or an ankle injury for most of the year. So, guys, Jeff, we'll start with you. When you take a look at that group of wide receivers, what do you think?
Well, I think that you got obviously have some veterans there that I think that everybody kind of understands. I would put Darius Slayton in there as a veteran. You know, he's still a younger player, but I think we understand the position that he's going to play with the Giants and, you know, that outside X position.
Well, he's gotten so many snaps, Jeff, his first 2 years. I agree. I would term him a young veteran, too.
Yeah, young veteran. I think that, you know, we kind of know what he's got. I think he was battling an injury last season that really a lot of people – I mean, he had an ankle. I think he was hurt. And so, obviously, his production went down a little bit, but I think that the Giants see good things with him. And I think Sterling Shepard is probably your most consistent player of all of those guys. Every single year, you look at the numbers, he's pretty consistent with every single one of them. You know, his receptions, yards, touchdowns, things like that. So you kind of know what you're going to get out of Sterling. And then there you got a bunch of young guys. Well, you talked about Tate. I think that's just another conversation, and that's soon enough we'll know about that. But you got a veteran there that is aging and really is a guy that will give you some production if he's back on the team. But I think that then you go to the younger guys, and Dante Pettis is somebody that got into the lineup at the end of the year. I think he shows some promise. Was he a first-round draft pick, guys? Or
second round, I believe.
Second round. He's very high draft pick. So I think there's a lot of promise there. C.J. Board come back from the concussion. I see him more as a special teams guy. And then Austin Mack, a guy that you did see a lot of playing time last year for a young guy. I think a lot of promise for him. So overall, I think this Dave Gettleman, I believe he needs a playmaker in this group. He's come out and said it, and I'm with him. I know you guys are too, and we're going to talk a lot more about that. But overall, I think this position, John and Lance, I think needs improvement. And I think there's going to be a lot of competition if there's going to be a training camp this year.
Hopefully. Well, I think the production for this entire group dipped, as you noted, Jeff, really across the board. Darius Slayton's numbers went down, but, I mean, everybody, I think, combined, they didn't get what they wanted out of this position when you look at what they were able to do in 2019. I mean, you pretty much gave a whole summary of everything. The only thing I'll add, if you want to be specific, I think if you're the Giants, you say to yourself, okay, Sterling Shepard, if he could stay healthy, you know what you could get out of him. Darius Slayton, if he's fully healthy, he's got a lot of experience under his belt over the first 2 years. You hope that he could get back to the level of production that he had his rookie year. I think you're saying to yourself, how do we improve that third wide receiver spot so that in the event that Slayton or Shepard go down via injury, somebody else is not just the third option who conveniently is there to take some snaps, but can actually be a playmaker. Now, what's interesting about Golden Tate is his snaps went down, but also his targets went down, too, immensely. I mean, he had 30 less targets this season than he did in 2019. So do they think that maybe if they feed him the ball a little bit more, is there room for him to bounce back? That's a possibility, but I think that there's room for them to add somebody, whether it be in the draft, whether it be in free agency, but somebody that also could come in and not just be somebody that they groom, but somebody that could come in and make an immediate productive spot on this team where they can say, hey, you know, I'm not just going to be the third wheel. There may be games where I could lead the team in receiving yards or receptions, and it could fluctuate throughout the season. There's room for that on this team right now.
Yeah, and I think the way you maximize Slayton and Shepard, because I think if you use both those guys at what they're good at, they're very good players. If you use Slayton as primarily a vertical threat, a guy that can run past people, run some of those deep in cuts, run one of some of those deep comebacks and deep outs that work off of his deep speed, I think he could be a very good wide receiver. Sterling Shepard, not primarily, doesn't have to just be a slot guy, but he can run inside and outside, great change of direction, short range, mid-range passing game, great coming in and out of his brace, gets separation. He's awesome in that role. So if you can focus those guys in those roles, and I think how you do that, Jeff, if you can find somebody to put on top of the mountain and that pushes those guys down a little bit, so they could focus in their roles as the Giants, you know, 2A and 2B options. I don't even want to separate them second and third options, right? They could be the 2A and 2B, using them in the roles that they're best at. But if you can find somebody that can be that true X-wide receiver that can just win consistently one-on-one at all areas of the field, specifically down the field, you know, and teams are terrified. Look, you need somebody where the team says, boy, if we let this guy get the ball in his hands in one-on-one coverage, we're in a lot of trouble. So if they could find somebody like that, that pushes the rest of this group down like a slot, that's how I think you can maximize the production out of this group.
Yeah, and real quick, I think both the free agent market and the draft this year are going to be, they're very deep. The pool is you're going to be able to find the guy that you're talking about, John. And I really think that the Giants present a great opportunity. Well, not so much for the draft because you're going to go there if you're drafted, but from a free agent standpoint, the Giants roster, if I'm a free agent wide receiver looking to go to a team to be a number one.
Very attractive, right?
This is a team that I can say to myself, listen, I've got a chance that, you know, I know they're not going to be able to break the bank because of just where they're at in their cap position unless they go and free up some money like we talked about with Golden. But the fact of the matter is that I'm very intrigued by going to the Giants with an up-and-coming team, a third-year quarterback that's looking for somebody like a number one to throw to. It's very attractive for me to go here if I'm a free agent.
Yeah, just think about it. You get a one, Lance, and then all of a sudden teams have to worry about Slayton deep. They have to worry about Shepard getting open in those short to mid-range area. Let's not forget about Evan Ingram. Oh, wait, then you have Saquon Barkley back who can catch the ball out of the backfield, and you need to, frankly, put eight guys in the box against him in the run game, especially if you're still using him and Daniel Jones in the read option where Jones can keep it or Saquon could take it. You have to really worry about that. Both those guys can make big plays out of those rushing attempts. All of a sudden, you're number one wide receiver, and you're sitting there, you're like, wow, it's going to be tough for teams to really to pay that much attention to me given everything else that's going on in this offense.
Well, that's the other thing that we have to bring up when we talk about the wide receivers. The return of Saquon Barkley helps your passing game because of what he brings to the table as somebody that could catch the ball out of the backfield. So to me, it's not just about them adding a typical wide receiver who's known for that position, but it's also the return of Saquon Barkley, especially when Daniel Jones is just simply looking to dump things off and maybe he's in trouble, Barkley's the type of guy that could turn a play that looked like it was going to be a loss of 2 yards, and maybe he'll give you 3 or 4 yards. So those little things add up, and now third and sevens or third and eights become third and fours. And that, to me, also is the difference between getting some additional yardage every game, getting an extra touchdown every game. So I don't think we could overlook the return of Saquon Barkley. You're not looking for one guy to be the savior, I guess, is my point.
Yeah.
You're looking basically for the return of a few guys who were banged up last year, and then maybe the addition of somebody through the draft to just help elevate the offense overall. Now, I think there's a few guys on the free agent market that are not necessarily maybe what Jeff is talking about, and I'm not saying that Jeff was campaigning for them to go out and get Allen Robinson, for example.
No, what I was actually saying here is that I don't think that the Giants are going to be able to go get those top-tier guys.
And I'm completely with you, Jeff.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be enough money to be spread around. And I think that because it's a deep pool, and this is where, I'll let you finish, Lance, but I think this is where you're going, I think they have a great opportunity to go find a guy like that. And then not to mention, you know, the pool in the draft this year, if the Giants want to take somebody in the second or even in the, early in the third round, you might be able to find two good receivers to compete with that group that we just talked about.
So that this way you can then weed out everybody and the top guy rise to the top. So using your premise in terms of free agency, and clearly they can wait for the draft, which we know has a great deal of depth. But as I was perusing the free agent market, I was looking at, first of all, maybe a guy that's young that you could still groom, that maybe hasn't really truly reached his ceiling, but also
I know where you're going.
Some flexibility to, you know, actually make a name for himself. So one name I'm going to throw out, and once again, I'm going to preface this, by saying these are not necessarily all sexy names, okay? And I wasn't necessarily looking for the sexy name. But one guy that I thought was attractive was somebody that actually played for the Jets this past season, Breshad Perriman, 27 years old. He's 6'1". He's got a great yardage per catch. He averaged about 17 yards per catch last season. He wasn't necessarily used heavily. You know, he's a guy that I think could be a very good number three guy and maybe even elevate himself to number two. And I don't think you have to break open the piggy bank for him. So that's one name that comes to mind. Another guy
I think Perriman duplicates Slayton a lot. I think they're very similar guys in the fact that they both kind of rely on their speed and their vertical guys. I'm not sure they necessarily complement each other as much as they're duplications of each other.
Well, I also think that this unit can use another home run hitter.
Sure, that's fair too.
You know, take the top off the defense. So I wouldn't necessarily be too worried that they're duplicating one another. I would just look at it and say, here's another weapon, speed-wise, that the defense has to worry about keeping up with. And if you want to go for the home run, he's more than capable of doing that. A guy that maybe is not necessarily known for his home run speed, but maybe is more of a compliment to what they have, 26 years old, I thought had a very nice season with the Cleveland Browns this year, Rashard Higgins, who I think also is not the one that's going to break open the piggy bank. I mean, he made less than $1 million this past season. And he would be somebody who's young enough, has upside. Maybe you want to take a flyer with him. Then the other guy that I'll throw out there, he wasn't heavily used. He's also been up and down throughout his career, but he's still young enough, and I'm sure is hungry to be used a little bit more, is Sammy Watkins of the Chiefs. 27 years old. Also, I think has not reached his ceiling. He's dealt with some injuries going back to his Buffalo Bills days. Maybe that's another guy that you want to give a chance to resuscitate, revive his career in a different environment.
Yeah, I'll throw out some of the guys just so the fans know what they are, Lance. I think those are some good names. I think Higgins is actually a underrated wide receiver. Watkins' injuries, obviously, he's had a bunch of lower leg injuries. When he's healthy, he's a really good player, and he's a guy that can, I think, do a little bit of everything as an outside receiver. But again, the health factor with him. But the guys at the top of this list, Chris Godwin from the Bucs, obviously, if he does hit free agency, he's not even 25 yet. He will be 25 by the time free agency comes around. He's a very good player. My guess is that the Bucs are either going to franchise him or not let him walk away.
Yeah.
Allen Robinson, same deal. I can't imagine the Bears are going to let him walk for nothing. Worst comes to worst, they throw the tag on him and they try to tag and trade him to a team that's looking for a top wide receiver. Same thing for the Lions and Kenny Galladay. If the Lions really are rebuilding, right, and they're starting from scratch here, why would you let him walk away, tag him, and then try to get at least like a second or a third rounder in a tag and trade move with him? Will Fuller's an interesting guy. How much money do you guys think Will Fuller's going to get? Because he's somebody that has speed. He's an outside receiver. He's the type of guy that is a big play threat. But when you say somebody's never healthy, this dude is never healthy. Yeah. And for a wide receiver to always have hamstring injuries, that's scary for me. So I wonder how much teams are going to be willing to commit to him given that just constant, constant injury issue that he's always dealing with.
Go ahead, Lance.
Well, I mean, that's why I actually didn't name any of the guys you listed.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand.
My logic, John, was between the money and the injury concerns, I was looking for maybe more realistic targets that the Giants can afford and have enough of an upside. I like Will Fuller. I'm with you. I've always found him to be an attractive weapon with the Texans, and every year you think this is going to be the year where he puts it all together, and he gives you double-digit games, and he shows you that he could be that perfect, reliable option to Deshaun Watson. Because one of the favorite statistics that I like to throw out is when you look at Watson's production when Fuller was on the field versus when Fuller wasn't on the field, it's night and day. His yardage per attempt and his yardage per completion, it's like two different quarterbacks. Not to say that Watson struggled without him, but I mean, it really elevated the offense. But here's the thing, John. If I am to entertain the idea of bringing in Will Fuller, I would be hesitant to give him a multi-year deal. I would want it to be a prove-it deal. Now, the question is, somebody like Fuller, who, you know, has an opportunity to hit free agency, I believe for the first time, you know, because other than that, he hasn't necessarily had a lucrative deal. Does he want to settle for a prove-it deal again?
No.
He's also, keep in mind, coming off a suspension, and he has to miss the first game of the season. It was a six-game suspension. He missed the last five.
Was that
so
PEDs?
He still has to have that play out.
Was that PEDs, Lance?
PEDs, yeah, correct. Was, that was performance-enhancing drugs. Now, one game is not the end of the world. You'd still have him for 15. But if you're already down one game, John, and then you tack on the injury history, you could already be penciling in, I'm signing a guy, and I'm probably not going to have him for a quarter of the season. If you just do the logic, right, between the injuries in the suspension. So that's another red flag to me. Listen, if Fuller wants to come to the Giants and there's a mutual interest and the money is right, I'd roll the dice. I'd have no issue. But the price has to be right because you know you have to prepare for he's not playing double-digit games.
Now, here's the other guy that I want to throw out there that I think is interesting because he was a high draft pick. He was a first-round pick. He's underachieved, though he had his best year of his career this past year. And I do think he's kind of that all-around wide receiver that can do a little bit of everything, win vertically, get some contested catches. He's a little bit on the bigger side. What do you guys think of Corey Davis? Is he somebody you would be willing to invest in, Jeff, and really say, okay, you know, we think he can continue to get better. He's just 26 years old, and we think he can kind of fill a role because I think he really does do things well that maybe you don't get as consistently from Slayton and Shepard.
Well, I'll tell you what he does well that is more consistent than a lot of the receivers that are on the Giants, and pardon me for this, but the guy doesn't drop passes.
No, he doesn't.
So I think that's kind of, you know, I think I look at him, I like him. I really do. As, you know, he's a reliable number two receiver, I guess. I mean, would you be your number one? I guess if you're going to go pay him whatever he's going to – I mean, is he a guy that's going to get 10, 12, 13 million a year?
I think he's probably going to get close to 15.
So, I mean, I just – and I love talking about these guys, but I just think it's so unrealistic, guys, for us to get on the subject of Leonard Williams and all the other guys that the Giants want to keep. I just don't know how this is going to happen.
No, Jeff, but, you're right.
You know, but I believe if, you know, in a perfect world, I would go. I love Corey Davis. I think he's a guy that that would do really well in this system. He's tough. And I think that he would do very good in Jason Garrett's system. I just don't think that we're going to be able to afford any of these guys.
Well, and I think then we get to the point here where Lance's initial point on the free agents was probably correct, where you're taking a look at some of the guys at the bottom of the or middle towards the lower part of the market, frankly, because in the draft you can find receivers now and not to pay them. And I do wonder if we're going to see some of these receiver contracts start to contract a little bit and get a little bit smaller as we go along. Look, the top guys will always get their money, but why would you want to go spend, you know, that much money on a player that's not a number one when maybe you can go find one in the second round of the draft? We've seen a bunch of number ones go in the second round of the draft. AJ Brown, DK Metcalf, go down the list. So I wonder, Lance, if teams are just going to say to themselves, why are we going to spend big money in free agency? We can just wait for the draft. And yeah, it's more of a risk. You don't know what you're getting, but you're getting somebody on a long-term cost control contract, and it's become proven over the past few years, if you're scouting right and you're picking the right guys, you can find guys in the draft that are going to help you right away.
Lance, let me just – what I think is going to happen – is I think that we're spot on with this, with the salary cap. I think that the guys that we mentioned are going to get tagged, okay? And then all of a sudden, the pool, the mix of players below those top, top guys that have been tagged, they're not going to be able to, they're not going to get the money, especially in the year now that the cap's only going to be 180, 180, whatever million it's going to be. These guys are probably going to take less. So the philosophy is what you're talking about, John. Let's just go draft these guys where we don't have to pay them a lot. But, I mean, the upside is that we've got them on either a 5 or a 4 year deal, and we're able to afford them, and they're just as good as the other qualified free agents that we're going to go out and spend $8 to $10 million a year. I don't see it happening.
I think it's more of the philosophy in conjunction to what Jeff just said of it's really the eye of the beholder. And what I mean by that, I think the teams that know these top wide receivers that are going to hit the free agent market probably value them more so than another team who has the logic of, yeah, why don't we just utilize the draft based on the success rate of a lot of guys that were taken in the second or the third round over the last few years. So, for example, I think Tampa Bay probably values Chris Godwin, and I like Godwin more so than maybe any other team because, one, they're just coming off a Super Bowl victory.
Sure.
They helped develop him. He wasn't a first-round pick, and they probably don't want to lose their own, and they think with his age, he still has yet to hit his ceiling. So I could see Tampa Bay willing to throw out a little bit more money. The Bears, well, Allen Robinson was with the Jaguars. Then the Bears signed him. Okay, they took him away from Jacksonville. So I think if Chicago is going to bring in a new quarterback this offseason, if they do acquire a Carson Wentz, they're probably going to say to themselves, we've got to have a number one guy, right, on the roster if we're going to bring in a guy like Carson Wentz as opposed to bringing in a youthful guy in the draft and starting all over. So I could see the Bears maybe valuing him because of their needs more so than the rest of the market.
Yeah, and Lance, by the way, just to add this on Robinson too, he's unique, right, because he's that 6'5", big-bodied guy.
Yeah.
Those guys aren't showing up in the draft a lot. A bunch of 6'1 guys, you can find a bunch of 5'11 guys. That's easy. But guys like Allen Robinson don't show up every day.
No, I think that's a great point. Well, here's the other thing, and that's why I want to bring in Corey Davis back to this, who you brought up, because Davis has the height. Davis is 6'3".
Yeah.
But keep in mind, guys, Davis was the fifth overall pick in 2017. Now, I'm curious where you guys stand. If you were to ask me, if you're Tennessee, for where they chose him,
disappointment.
I don't think he's met the value of where they selected him in the draft.
Absolutely. Yet. No question. I agree.
So I guess the question for Tennessee is, do you go back to the draft board, and do you just try to upgrade the position? Remember, you brought in A.J. Brown, and A.J. Brown, I think, is showing a little bit more flashes than Corey Davis, I would say.
I would say Brown's there one, and Davis is there two.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And now, Davis had just under the amount of yardage that A.J. Brown had. He had 14 less targets, but A.J. Brown had 11 touchdowns. Corey Davis had 5. So I don't think there's any question. A.J. Brown's their guy moving forward. So do you, once again, do you say, we'll get the compliment in the draft, and we'll let Corey Davis walk? Yeah, I could see them perhaps doing that. But then I think if you're a team considering Corey Davis, if you don't think he played up to the fifth overall pick, but he wants fifth overall pick money, you know, where do you draw the line with that?
Yeah.
That's the million-dollar question. Do you value giving him a little bit more on the open market because you don't think that you can get an Allen Robinson or Chris Godwin? But then you have to compare that to, can we find Corey Davis in the draft? And right now I would lean towards, I think you could find the guy in the draft that could give you maybe the upside that Corey Davis has.
And by the way, people don't realize this, the Titans averaged over 30 points per game this year. Their offense was spectacular.
Well, it helps when you have Derrick Henry.
Yes, it does. And by the way, Ryan Tannehill's playing the best ball of his career too. So are they willing to, you know, to improve that defense, to take the money they would have given to a guy like Davis, to your point, Lance, replace him in the draft, try to use that money on defense to get the defense a little bit better? Or do they value, look, we want to keep this group together. We were so good offensively. Why do we want to break these guys up? So I'm not sure, you know, what their front office is considering when they make those decisions. But let's take a quick look at the draft here, guys. But very quickly first, I want to remind everybody that Big Blue Kickoff Live is presented by the new X Series of Scratch-Offs from the New York Lottery. Now you can multiply your winnings up to 200 times. Please play responsibly, and Limited Giants even. Season tickets are on sale now for the 2021 season. In addition to ticket savings, membership benefits include access to exclusive events, experiences, pre-sales, and more. You can lock in your seat starting at just $100. Call 888-NYG-1925 or visit giants.com/tickets for more information. And we've talked about it, guys, all offseason. This draft class is as deep as last year's. It's simply impressive. it has the guys at the top. You could have as many as three wide receivers go in the top 10. If you want to throw Kyle Pitts in there too, that's four. You're probably going to have another one or two go in the first round, and then you're going to have probably another, you know, four or five going round two, I would bet. So it's a very deep class, and we've talked about the Giants' options at the top of that first round. I don't think we really need to do that again, whether it's Ja'Marr Chase, Devontae Smith, or Jalen Waddle. I think simply based on role, I think Smith and Chase meet more of what the Giants are looking for. But would it surprise me when all is said and done if Waddle turns out to be a better player than those other two guys? It wouldn't shock me. It would surprise me more if he's better than Chase. I think he's got a real chance to be better than Smith. But heck, all three of those guys are really good. But you go into that second round, and I'll open the floor to you guys. You know, if Rashad Bateman somehow was there at pick 43, I would jump on him. He, to me, has number one potential. He's over 6 feet tall. He's a good route runner. He can do a little bit of everything. He would be my ideal guy in the second round. That might have to be a trade-up opportunity, to be quite honest with you. And frankly, if you can get Rashad Bateman, I might be okay with that. You have the tiny guys, the two Moores, Elijah and Rondell. Lance's guys, they're 5'9", under 200 pounds, but they can run. Kadarius Toney, who we've talked about from the Senior Bowl, and then Terrace Marshall, the bigger guy out of LSU at 6'3", and then De'Ami Brown, who's kind of a speedster, deep threat out of North Carolina. So, guys, that's nine receivers I mentioned right there that are probably all going to be second-round picks. There could be a couple more on top, or all first- or second-round picks. There are probably going to be more guys than that. So there are going to be options in the draft. Again, I'm not sure if Bateman drops down to 40-something, Jeff.
I hope so. I really, you know, when you and I were kind of texting back and forth about today's show.
I heard you grunt in agreement, which is why I went to you first.
I like this guy a lot. I really do.
He's a good player.
I really do. I just feel like he's a guy, you know, he went to Minnesota, so he doesn't get a lot of, you know, a lot of exposure, if you will. He didn't see him a lot.
His quarterback play this year was rough, too. Oh, boy.
But
not good.
I like his size. 6'2", 210. And I like his releases. What did we talk about all season? Why are these guys getting off the line of scrimmage?
Little stutter step, Jeff. He is great off the line. So, oh man,
I feel like he's not a sleeper. It's not the word I want to use, but he's a guy that if he's at 42, I would run to the podium, whether there's going to be one or not. I would run up there, throw the card at whoever's announcing it, and say, I want the guy right this second.
Now, unfortunately, I think he might be one of those guys that slips into the between 20 to 30 range.
I agree, but I've just, you know, expected that this is my guy. Here's another one that I just want to mention.
Sure.
That, you know, I kind of put him in this receiver pool, and that's Kyle Pitts, because I feel like whoever is going to draft this guy, he's going to get 50% of his plays at a wide receiver position. And so I'm going to take him as a wide receiver. Will he be there at 11? And so I'm sitting in bed last night. I'm thinking about our show today, and I'm thinking to myself, well, if you look at all these mock drafts and you look at all the quarterbacks that are going to go, okay, and then you got some of these top receivers that are going to go, the Giants are at number 11. So if we just start to, like, move down the list – quarterback's gone. Okay, maybe an edge rusher, maybe gone or here or there. The Giants, I mean, they might be able to sit there and there might be a Pitts or a Smith available at this 11th pick.
No, it could be.
You know? So I'm all on for Kyle Pitts. I know that he's a guy that I think that Jason Garrett would drool over to be able to have him with another year with Ingram and get those things straightened out. But I like those guys. And I guess my sleeper, if you will, is not a sleeper, but Rashad Bateman is my guy that I picked out of all these ones. My number two guy that I really like is Kadarius Toney.
Yeah, good
now,
point.
There's a guy that will probably be there a little bit later. But I feel like he, you know, he breaks a lot of tackles. He's explosive. He has good size. So I think those are my two guys that I would pick out of the blue if somebody told me that, hey, can you get these guys and those other guys are gone.
Yeah, I'm with you on both of them. I actually circled Tony's name. He had a very good Senior Bowl week, I thought. He had a few dropsies here or there, but I don't necessarily think that that's a reason to downgrade him. He's a weapon, Jeff, as you noted. I don't even necessarily look at him just as a wide receiver. Yeah. I think you could really move him around. I think he could play in a variety of spots, maybe even utilize him as a running back in certain schemes. And if you get him out in open space, he's got that blazing speed that he could do a lot of damage. Now, it also goes back to, you know, what John brought up earlier, the duplication factor. He's only 5'11". So do you feel as if you already have that quickness between Saquon Barkley and then the shiftiness of Sterling Shepard? Do you want to bring in a little bit more diversity? If that's the case, then I don't know if the Giants would be attractive to Tony. But I think if you're just thinking weapon, get Daniel Jones another playmaker on the field, I think he fits that bill. As far as Bateman is concerned, Bateman's got the height. Bateman did not wow everybody this season statistically.
He only played, five games, I think,
correct, because then he opted out. And I think also the quarterback play is a contributing factor.
Yeah, read him
out. I think, though, the reason why I'm bringing up the production is, if you guys remember, okay, a year ago, it was Bateman and Tyler Johnson, and they were dynamic, the two of them. Mm-hmm. Johnson got drafted by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I really was very high on him. I thought he showed some nice flashes with the Bucs this season. And, you know, if for some reason they lose Chris Godwin, look out for him next season.
No, absolutely.
To then take a next step up.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people thought, okay, with Johnson out of the picture, this is now going to be the year for Bateman to be the true number one guy, because he had a good season with Johnson, but he was number two. It didn't happen, but once again, I don't think you could get too caught up in that. I think it was the fact that he had a small sample size of games, which was five, because then he opted out, and then, of course, the quarterback performance. So I wouldn't shy away from Bateman because the productivity doesn't jump off the page. I think you've got to feel good, though, that what he showed you in 19 with Tyler Johnson alongside him is something that if you brought him to an NFL team with some talent around him, that he could get back to that stage.
Yeah,
I'm with you, Jeff. I like both of those guys as well.
This is the last thing we'll say before we get to the calls. We have somebody on hold at 973-667-1960. I know we go long on the wide receivers, but for the first 30 minutes, there's a lot of them to talk about.
That's right.
This is how I look at it. If you wait for the second round to pick your wide receiver, and you don't have the opportunity, or you pass on one of those top four guys that we talked about, there isn't a huge diversity of playing style there. I'm not sure Nico Collins is worth that pick at 43. I think that's something that you have to worry about if he's good enough. Is Terrace Marshall good enough to pick there? Is he going to be there? Is Bateman going to make it there? Because once you get past that, you don't have that big-bodied X-wide receiver. And again, I'm not just looking for tall guys. I'm looking for guys to fill that X-wide receiver role. And I'm not sure I see a lot of those guys left. So that brings me back now to that first round guy. So Jeff mentioned it, and we'll do a kind of mock draft review, top five at each position thing later in the week. So I don't want to kind of talk about who's going to get picked. But if you had to rank right now those top four guys, the three receivers, Chase, Waddle, Smith, and then Pitts, how would you rank them? Jeff, I'll start with you in order of priority. If you somehow, some miracle happens and all four guys are on the board, what is your order of preference?
So I have availability to all those guys you just said.
And rank them one through four for me.
I would go number one for me would be Jamar Chase. I think he's by far he's the best in the class. Okay. Mm-hmm. Got size 6'1", 200, can play both outside and inside if you need him. Okay.
Yep, I'm with you.
I think that number two, and this is going to surprise you. Okay. But I like being able to have a guy that can maybe play two positions, and that would be Kyle Pitts. I love this dude. He's 6'6", guys. Now, and he's 6'6", and he's 240 pounds. He's not 280 pounds.
And he's not
200 pounds either.
And he moves like someone that's 6'2",
unbelievable.
Which is what's scary
about it. And then I would probably go Jalen Waddle and then Devontae Smith. Now, why am I putting the Heisman Trophy winner at the fourth of the guys that we just picked? It's just personal preference. These guys all could be put into 1, 2, 3, 4 in different numbers, but these are the guys that I like. I think Jamar Chase is your number one guy out of these people, and Kyle Pitts to me is someone that I really, really like.
Jeff, you want to laugh? I think my order is the exact same as yours.
No way.
Except I would have Smith ahead of Waddle. Just because I think he can play outside
It's not even the size.
I just think I saw him on tape win outside more. Like when Waddle played, he was almost exclusively in the slot. I feel more comfortable. And once Waddle got hurt, they kind of moved Smith into the slot, by the way.
Yeah.
But before that, I saw Smith win outside enough. The height thing isn't a huge deal for me. They're like 2 inches apart, whatever. Waddle's, I think, a more physical player than Smith anyway. And I know Smith's only 175 pounds, but I watched almost all his targets last year. It's not like he was getting beat up at the line of scrimmage or anything like that. So that doesn't bother me. So I have Smith like a smidge ahead of Waddle right now. Maybe my mind will change. But if I'm a different team, I might have Waddle ahead of Smith.
That's right. So, it depends on the team.
Exactly.
Yep, absolutely. When we said about size,
yeah.
Remember about Smith, he is small. He's 175 pounds. Now that will, I don't know if that'll deter some people, but when you look at having 3 or 4 years at Alabama in the weight room and doing things that he did, he didn't put on a lot of weight from the time he came out of high school.
That might just be his frame.
I think that is his frame. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to get any bigger, or it may be a couple pounds bigger, but you know those guys, a lot of those guys, kind of like Mario Manningham. Remember him? He was a slim little guy. They tried to put weight on him.
Right.
I mean, he couldn't do it. Well, that's just the way he is.
And by the way, Jeff, that's why I think Ja'Marr Chase is a little bit different. He's so strong.
Yes.
And remember, when we saw him play that year for LSU, he was a true sophomore. He was 19 years old. And he was like chucking 21-year-old kids around. Like, who knows how much bigger he is and faster he is now that he's had a year of training. So that's why I think Ja'Marr Chase kind of separates himself. Lance, how would you rank those four?
Well, I would have Ja'Marr Chase number one. I've gone back and forth between Pitts and Devontae Smith as two and three. I would argue what Jeff brought up. I think the difference between Pitts and Smith is more of what your team needs, what your scheme is.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And whether or not you're going to showcase the tight end. Do you view Pitts as a wide receiver, as Jeff pointed out? So I think those are interchangeable. If you were to ask me for the Giants' perspective, I'd put Smith ahead of Pitts. Mm-hmm. And then I would put Waddle as four. The good news about Smith is, and this is why I'm not worried about his frame, he played 13 games each of the last three seasons in Alabama. So he's proven to me that even though there's some concern about his body frame, he stayed pretty durable for the most part. I know he got the finger injury in the last game, but I'm not going to let that be.
Some of those guys are Gumbies. They really are.
Exactly, right? You could bend them, and you're never going to break them.
That's exactly right. And, you know, and to me, I think, you know, one of our concerns, all of our concerns of wide receivers are hamstrings, right? They're runners. These guys are thoroughbreds. But, you know, like you said, Lance, if he's played 13 games in the last two years, that tells me that he's in shape and that the frame is not going to bother him. You know, so it's a good point. And I think that's a lot of things that people have to look at is what his track record is. If we're talking about him only playing six last year and, you know, nine the year before, we got a problem. But he's consistently on the field, which, you know, you can't make the team in the tub, right?
That's 100%. Yeah.
So well, I think that's a good point.
To your point, he didn't fluctuate in terms of games played, and that to me is a positive sign. You want to see a guy that consistently, hey, you know you can rely on him for double-digit games. So that doesn't allow me to shy away from him. And then, you know, also, I agree with your point, Jeff, that Pitts can be a wide receiver depending on how you utilize him. I'm just wondering, if the Giants were to bring in Pitts, and they already have a wide receiver-esque tight end in Evan Ingram, is that too much duplication and not enough versatility? I'm just wondering. I'm not saying Pitts is not a weapon. I'm just wondering, are you not diversifying your offense enough if you're going to just put Pitts and Ingram on the field at the same time? You're going to have those guys run routes, and maybe there's not as much blocking involved and so forth.
Well, I think the duplication will be for 1 year because we don't know what's going to happen.
Of course. You don't know long-term if Evan Ingram was going to be back.
So here's the other thing. And then when I was saying that he could be a 50% player, he could play outside, he could play inside, whatever it is. But, I mean, there's your diversification, if you will, to be able to line these guys up anywhere. I mean, I think that in the NFL, I don't know how much that Kyle Pitts will do with the line of scrimmage with his hand in the dirt. I know that Evan Ingram has proved that he can be a decent blocker, but I don't know enough about Kyle Pitts and his blocking ability. I do know about his receiving ability, and at 6'6 and 240 in the red zone, and that also just get the ball in his hands as far as, you know, the 50-50 balls. Daniel Jones needs someone like that. So I think that I would be okay with the duplication theory, Lance, but I think that, you know, a year from now, they're going to have to make a decision on Evan Ingram anyways.
Right.
And if he does leave, then they've got a tight end still at the same ability as the two guys that one guy left and now they still have another.
And by the way, a week ago, Lance, I was with you. I had Smith ahead of Pitt. So I think you can make that argument either way, to be honest with you.
Sure.
Well, that's why I said interchangeable was the term that I utilized. Plus, mm-hmm. to Jeff's point, you're not just drafting for 2021. You're drafting beyond that. So if the philosophy is Evan Engram is not necessarily in their long-term plans, then it really becomes maybe duplication for a year, and then all of a sudden Pitts is the number one guy moving forward.
Well, we are going to do tight ends later in the week, so I don't want to spend too much time on the tight ends here, folks. We can talk about that when we do our tight end show. 973-667-1960. Big Blue Kickoff 5 is brought to you by the new X Series of Scratch-Offs from the New York Lottery. Now you can multiply your winnings up to 200 times. Please play responsibly. Don't miss out on your chance to experience a premier hospitality experience watching Giant games and world-class concerts in 2021 as a Giant suite partner. Limited full-season locations are available, or place a deposit for individual games. Call 888-NYG-1925 or visit giants.com/suites for more information. Giant fans get a New York Giants checking account from Investors Bank with the Giants branded debit card, security features, and discounts at the Giants online shop. You can earn up to $250 when you open an account at investorsbank.com/Giants. Member FDIC. All right, let's go to the phones at 973-667-1960. Caller, you're on the air. You've been waiting very patiently. We appreciate it. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Scott from New Mexico.
What's up, Scott?
Hi, guys. First of all, I agree with Lance on the free agency picks. I think Rashad Perriman and Rashad Higgins would both be excellent picks. I like Sammy Watkins also, but I'm also concerned with his injuries and whether he's going to be efficient. But the question, one of the questions I had for you, do you see neither the draft or the free agency any receivers that are capable of, say, doing what a Julio Jones does, which is catch 80 to 90 passes?
Yeah, Jamar Chase, Devontae Smith, Allen Robinson. I think those would be the guys. And Julio Jones is a super big fast guy, so I don't think Godwin is quite in that mold. I think Allen Robinson's closer to that mold, though he's not as fast as Julio Jones. I think Jamar Chase can be anything you want him to be. I think he's that talented. And I think while Devontae Smith doesn't have the broad shoulders of a Julio Jones, and I mean literally the broad shoulders of a Julio Jones, he could be Marvin Harrison for all we know when all is said and done.
Yeah, the other thing that I'm concerned about is I'm not that interested in really pursuing wide receivers in the draft. I know there's a lot of good ones in the first round, and the reason I say that, it won't make any difference who the Giants draft if they can't throw them the football. And the reason I'm saying that is the team pass block win rate for the Giants was dead last. They were at 46%. By comparison, Green Bay was at 74%.
Yep.
So if you don't have a strong enough line to throw to these receivers, it doesn't really matter who you get. So I would be more concentrated in getting receivers in free agency than I would be in the draft. I think tight end is an important position, and I don't think there's anything wrong, as Lance had pointed out. I think, or it was you, John, in regards to duplicating what you have already with Evan Engram and the possibility of getting Kyle Pitts, because they are sort of similar athletes. I think Pitts is maybe 2 inches taller, but basically the same size. I would rather concentrate on a wide receiver like Waddle, who's my personal favorite, to be the receiver that the Giants would draft if they're going that route. But if they can get somebody in the second or third round, I prefer that, because their concentration should really be in free agency getting a wide receiver. And it's the way we've sort of built the team a little bit. And if you look at the secondary, for example, all built through free agency. The best linebacker we have, built through free agency.
Yeah, but Scott, you're not going to be able to sign the equivalent of James Bradbury at wide receiver this offseason because of the salary cap.
That's true. So that being said, if you're looking at the overall picture of the Giants and you know what the cap number is going to be, where do you draft a wide receiver in the first round, or do you take the tack? As I think Lance was pointing out, there's enough good players in free agency that might fall under, you know, the salary constructs that the Giants have, that they can actually draft a guy like Perriman or Higgins, and they would be adaptable. Even if it's a duplication, as you pointed out, Darius Slayton. Darius Slayton was injured the whole season, so he's going to be, I think,
well, Scott, what if I told you the Giants could get Jalen Waddle in the first round and then Alex Leatherwood sitting there in round two for them to pick?
A possibility. I mean, you know,
it's not. No, that is very possible.
So So, but I'm trying to figure out, because it's a question of, are the Giants going to be competitive in this season, or is this another sort of a building year mode? And I'd like them to be competitive to try to make the playoffs this year.
I'm not sure. I don't understand why that would make a difference.
Well, I think their needs on the offensive line dictate that they have to go that route, only because of what I just pointed out, that their pass blocking win rate is so low.
Right, right, right. But what if both Rashawn Slater and Penei Sewell are off the board 11? You're going to force it then?
No, you don't force it. Obviously, you don't force it. Right. I agree with you 100%. I'm just trying to get clued in as to, with these receivers, and there's plenty on the free agency market, do you save the time and the effort that you have to do to train receivers when you take them out of the draft, as opposed to getting players that are sort of ready to step in and actually
all of these
start
receivers
playing
are,
right
yeah,
away?
They're all ready to
Thank
step
you, Scott.
In. The one that they run, the offices that they run in college, there's probably not one position that's more ready to play than it is the wide receiver position. And by the way, just for Scott, you know, of the 17 big board players that I'm looking at on Pro Football Focus, that there's four in the top 17 picks are wide receivers. So, I mean, when you're looking for strictly from a grading standpoint of how teams that don't draft for need, they rank their players and that it is. I mean, if there's a wide receiver sitting there and you're drafting and you're on your draft board is by calibers of player that you've ranked and it's a wide receiver, you're taking the wide receiver. And there's a lot of them. So, and I'm intrigued by the whole thing about where number 11 sits for a lot of these teams above them. You know, what they're going to do, that maybe the Giants just get lucky and this thing just drops in their lap somehow. And they get
one
possible. Of these guys.
Well, especially with the quarterbacks, Jeff. I think also can throw a curveball. And that could maybe help somebody fall to the Giants. But as far as the last caller's point, and you hit on this, if there's probably the most smoothest transition in football, it's wide receiver in terms of making an immediate impact. If anybody asks me which position it is, the least concern would be wide receiver. Look at last year's draft class, guys. I'll just read you a few names who went. It really, to me, doesn't even matter what round they were taken. I'm just looking at, did they make an impact as a rookie? C.D. Lamb, I would say impactful for the Cowboys. Yep. Justin Jefferson meets that requirement for the Minnesota Vikings. Brandon Ayuk for the San Francisco 49ers. T. Higgins with the Bengals. Michael Pittman Jr., okay, he was hurt, but when he came back, I thought he made enough of an impact for the Indianapolis Colts. Chase Claypool was a weapon for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And if you want to maybe go, once again, a guy was hurt, but Denzel Mims, when he came back for the Jets, he would probably fit under that umbrella as well.
And Lance, I mean, by the way, your standards are so high. Jerry Jeudy, who caught 52 passes for 856 yards and 3 touchdowns, wasn't even mentioned. That's how good these other guys were that he didn't even make the cut. And that's a damn good year.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's probably more of a reflection of the Denver passing game overall.
Of course, 100%.
But yeah, when you look at him from a statistical standpoint, I would throw him in there as well. That's not a problem at all. So, you know, that's a high-volume group. And all those names, by the way, that I read were taken in the first two rounds of last year's NFL draft, just to give you an idea, because Denzel Mims was the last guy taken at the wide receiver spot in the second round. So I'm not concerned that if the Giants rely on the draft to bolster the wide receiver position, it's going to be a three-year process till you get playmaking ability out of him. Plus, the other thing that you have to take into consideration, and I think, John, you hit on this a little bit, Leonard Williams, Dalvin Tomlinson, okay, there are other guys that the Giants may want to re-sign. So if they're going to use a lot of their cap space to make sure those guys stay put, you're not going to have the luxury to then go on a spending spree at every other position, specifically wide receiver. That's why when I threw out the names that I did off the top of the show, I was thinking from that mindset.
Sure.
Who realistically is not going to break open the piggy bank that you could target, but at the same time, you know, hey, we could still get a big playmaker in the draft. I think that may be the most rational thought for the Giants. Get a solid wide receiver in free agency, such as a Perryman or a Higgins or a Watkins, and then go for the home run more so in
100%.
The draft.
100%. It's talk about economics, and some of the names that we talked about here, and I'm just going on, I'm using Pro Football Focus as a reference, guys, because I think they do a really good job at ranking the things. It's just a lot of information. But the fact is, the guys that we were just talking about, they have the salaries, the projected salaries. Well, those guys that we just talked about are all around the 6 to 8 million, maybe at the tops at 8 million. But, you know, that's how you can get under that cap. by being able to go out and get yourself a free agent like those guys that we talked about, then hit a home run with – it proves your point that what you just said, Lance, where those guys that you just mentioned in the first two rounds. I mean, you've got just enough guys this year that we could say the same next year that these guys hit on it. Then it's a home run. You got yourself a 4 or 5 year guy that you've locked in for your draft. You don't have to pay a whole lot of money. You went out and you got yourself a veteran receiver for maybe $6 to $8 million a year. Okay, and then you can do whatever else you wanted to do with your free agents, your own free agents, and then maybe improve some of the other positions. I mean, we have so much to talk about with this roster. I mean, we're just scratching the surface with the wide receivers, which, by the way, might be the best thing to talk about because it's so deep. You know what I'm saying?
And I think Scott makes a good point. Look, and I've made this point before, and I think you guys generally agree with me, that what you need to do this offseason is make the situation for Daniel Jones as favorable as possible.
Yeah.
Whether it's having guys to throw the ball to or having protection up front. And I know Paul's probably much higher on the current offensive line crew than we are and has more confidence to kind of stick with what they got. I'm okay with, you know, deciding let's bolster that unit a little bit more. So I think there's a real possibility that, you know, the four playmakers we're talking about plus four quarterbacks plus one of the offensive linemen are all gone. And if you're sitting there and Rashawn Slater or maybe Penei Sewell, who knows, is the best guy on your board and you're sitting there at 11, I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
I have zero problem with that because he helps your quarterback. And that's, at this point, I think the most important thing you can do. Lance, we'll get to you in a second. I want to remind people first that the New York Giants and Quest Diagnostics want our fans to come back stronger than ever. Now you can order your own lab test through Quest Direct to get the health answers you need most. And Big Blue Kickoff 5 is brought to you by the new X Series of Scratch-Offs from the New York Lottery. Now you can multiply your winnings up to 200 times. Please play responsibly.
Well, what I was going to add to what you just said, John, is I'm completely with you, too. Listen, we saw it firsthand in the Super Bowl, okay? As great as Patrick Mahomes is, if you don't have the guys up front that are going to buy you the extra second or two, you can make a dynamic offense look very mediocre.
And Daniel Jones isn't exactly running around like Patrick Mahomes is either to make 100%. A billion plays.
Yeah, he doesn't have the playmaking ability to, you know, roll around from sideline to sideline and milk 15 seconds and still get the throw.
Right,
okay?
Exactly.
So you're not even working with that quarterback, and we're talking about the offensive line. So it absolutely means that there's always going to be room for improvement. And, John, we've had conversations on and off the air. I don't think that even the guard play is solidified on this roster, okay? Do you know for a fact that Shane Lemieux is going to be the guy moving forward? What happens with Will Hernandez? Is Kevin Zeitler going to be on the team? So, you know, people focus on the tackles. Well, let's not also forget the interior, I think, is still at least up in the air in terms of assigned roles. So if there is an offensive lineman that the Giants like, I would have no issue with them going after that position early. And I'd also have no position going for that in the second round. But
nope.
I think you got to be careful that if you're at 11, and this goes back to the previous caller, Scott, and you're saying, okay, well, we need help on the offensive line, but there's also really good wide receivers and offensive playmakers, and maybe it's our third offensive lineman on the list. You get into dangerous territory where you say, we're going to take the third offensive lineman on our board and pass up on all the offensive weaponry simply because we're still a little bit concerned about what we're working with on the offensive line. Maybe they can get somebody in the second round who could help the offensive line. I would not rule that out. And while you mentioned a few of the tackles, two other names that I want to throw out, and I'm not saying that these guys are going to be taken high, although this next name is rising up the board. Christian Darrisaw of Virginia Tech is a name to watch out for, okay? I mean, this guy can push a player at the line, and he could take him 3-4 feet, 3-4 yards up the field.
Now,
okay?
Big boy. He's a big boy, strong guy.
Oh, is he ever? Mm-hmm. I mean, I have seen it on film tons of times. So that's a name to watch out for who I think has potential the next level. Another guy, once again, I'm not telling that these guys are top five picks. Stone Forsythe of Florida, another big guy who's had experience at the right side, the left side, also on the interior a little. Maybe that's somebody also that could be around as the Giants move into other rounds. Mm-hmm. There may be a quality offensive lineman that they could still find without going for him at 11. That's all I'm saying.
And then another guy at the top, too, is Elijah Vera Tucker out of USC, who some people see as a tackle, some people see as a guard. So there are a bunch of options there, Jeff. I'll get to you in a second. I have one more caller I want to get to, okay? 973-667-1960. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Caller, you got to turn your internet down. I hear my lucid tones in the background. Caller, we're going to you.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Marty from Manahawkin.
Hey, Marty.
Hey, Marty.
Hey, I was just wondering, you're talking about the wide receivers, and the Giants seem to have some interest in that kid from Clemson that they went to the pro day the other day. There seems to be two wide receivers over there that look pretty good. The one is Powell, and the other one is the Rodgers.
Amari Rodgers, you're talking about?
Yep.
Yeah.
I would say those are probably late. Powell's probably more of a third round pick, and Rodgers is probably a late two or early three as well, I would say. And Rodgers, Marty, is really more of a slot guy, so I'm not sure he quite fit. He's very similar to Sterling Shepard, let me put it that way.
Yeah, well, I don't think we're going to replace Sterling, that's for sure. I just thought I'd call in, throw that out. I called in a little late anyway, so.
No worries. I appreciate it, Marty.
Thanks, Marty.
Thanks.
Thank you. Figgs, you had something before?
Well, I was just saying about the offensive lineman. I know that it's another day, another topic, but – you know, certainly you have the opportunity, in my opinion, that if there's a center there, okay, and I know that Nick Gates was the center last year, and you probably don't want to rock the boat there, but you know, I think it's this whole offensive line to me is very volatile, because when you start talking about every position, we can get into multiple conversations about every one of them. Left tackle, what's going to happen with Solder? Left guard, what's going to happen there? At center, can Nick Gates move to a guard position to replace one of those guys that might be leaving, like Hernandez or Zeitler? And maybe we draft a center. Then you got the right tackle. What's going to happen with – you know what I'm saying? So there's – like, I agree with you. I think that there's a lot of conversation to be had about this offensive line. I'm still not sold on it. I think it's improving. But it wouldn't surprise me if Dave Gettleman, who believes in that, in the big hog mollies, doesn't surprise us all by going and maybe drafting somebody because you can never have enough depth at that line position, in my opinion. And I know this is another day to talk about it, so I don't want to get too far down.
No worries. Well, we have one more, Lance. I have one more call I wanted to get to, okay?
Sure.
973-667-1960. Call, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Oh, okay.
Short, sweet, to the point.
So, Lance, the floor is yours, my friend.
Well, that was a very valid point, I thought. So much to build off of. I don't know where to start.
Lance's favorite call of the week right there, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Short, sweet, yeah. Charlie.
Less is more, as they say, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the old phrase? Well, no, I'm just going to piggyback off of Jeff's point. And, you know, the other guy, and once again, I understand that this is not an offensive line show, but let's face it, guys, a lot of these topics are interchangeable.
Of course they are.
They're all connected because, you know, one topic leads to another. When you look at the Giants draft, just in terms of the target of 11, and I'm curious what you guys think, I'm curious how much of a conversation they need to have with Nate Solder, okay,
yeah,
over the next few weeks, and know, you know, what his plans are, where do they envision fitting him in. Of course, Joe Judge and Nate Solder go back to their New England days, and I'm not saying that they need to work out the contract. I mean, he still is under contract. It paused. They carried over. But my point is, do you envision him coming back?
Yeah.
Is he your starting right tackle? Are you going to move Andrew Thomas? I think you want to know that before you at least get to the draft, because that also changes, Jeff, to your point. Like Matt Peart, you drafted last year. Well, if he's now not going to be a starter, and maybe they rotate the tackles like they did this past year, does that change the competition at other positions? The point is, the Nate Solder question, that's something that to me sets dominoes in effect moving forward. You got to solidify that first before you really know what direction you're going to go in.
Yeah, and I think that I believe, I don't know this for sure, but I'm almost certain that these conversations are starting to be had, because like you said, Lance, the team's got to know kind of the direction that it's going to go because of the players that are currently on your roster and what the situation is with cap, where your mind is. And for me, for Nate Solder, it's just basically a phone call or a Zoom meeting or something just to say, hey guy, how you doing? Where you're at with your life? What's going on? Are you wanting to play next year? You know, so I believe that those conversations are being, they're having those types of conversations because it's imperative moving forward. You've got to be on this. And I don't think that he's the only one. I think that there's a lot of other conversations that are being had right now about other veteran positions that, you know, the Giants need some money. They're going to have to go find some money. And I know that, you know, a lot of these people, I don't know how much money they can go find, but, you know, in order for them to go get what we just talked about today, a wide receiver or maybe an edge rusher or even the two guys, Tomlinson and Williams, they're going to need $40 million somehow. So
and remember,
right now,
and Jeff, for the guys that have dead money, they have the June 1st designation too, with the cap likely going up after this year. They could always use that too. So
they can. But one thing that hurts you about the June 1st is you don't get to use that money before that.
Well, sure, you can.
Yeah.
If you designate somebody a June 1st cut, that money immediately becomes available to
you. It does. Okay, well, then that makes sense. Because it wouldn't
It's just
make
like anything else. It all catches up with you, though, in the end.
Sure it does.
That's the only thing.
But the reason, and Lance, I'm with you.
It helps you in the short term.
And Lance, I'm with you. I never like to kick money down the road. I think it's a bad idea. But I think with the unique circumstance with the cap this year, this is the 1 year I would consider doing it. Though, if you read Peter King's column, he reported that it looks like they might have these new television deals done within a month, which might help put a little balloon underneath that cap number and lift it up a little bit to maybe get a little bit more money into the pool this year. By the way, he said in his story, I couldn't believe it, the increases in each deal, each individual deal, could be anywhere from 70 to 100%. I couldn't believe it.
The TV contracts?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Well, oh my it's good God. To be the NFL, apparently.
Oh, man, you think?
That's a factory over there. Just print that money. Just, just wow. Oh,
and they think they might have the Thursday night might become a streaming package with Amazon was something that was in there, too.
Well, so. That's another way to bring it even more revenue.
Yeah,
there you
exactly.
Go.
Ching, ching.
You got to give credit to the NFL. They're always looking for another avenue. And that's where, by the way, because remember, we've had conversations all throughout even the season. We know that the floor is going to be $175 million. That's what we know. We don't know what the ceiling is going to be. Initially, you know, we thought maybe a little bit above $175. I've seen reports it could go maybe to $185.
Yep.
The one thing I will say is I'm not anticipating it to be $198 like it was in 2020.
No. In fact, if it's $190, I'd be surprised.
Correct. So it's going to go down. The question is, how far down does it go in comparison to 2020? It seems as if the projections may not be as bad as we had anticipated, but you have to figure, if you're all 32 teams, you may have to make an additional cut or two because you may not have the extra $6 to $7 million that you anticipated. And while that may not seem like a lot of money, that's the difference between grabbing a wide receiver that we were talking about earlier in the show and not having an opportunity.
Well, I remember this too. Teams plan, when they plan ahead, they plan for a 5 to 10% increase year over year. So going into next year, long-term planning-wise, if it was $198 last year, these teams probably thought it would go up to $210 in 2021. So instead of $210, it's going to be, you know, let's say even in the best case scenario, $190. That's still a $20 million shortfall as to what teams were planning for. So it's a big, big difference.
Oh, believe it. And by the way, that just goes to show you that every team is going to be looking for money because they're not getting it. So if
look under the couch, Jeff. You never know.
And listen, I mean, as many times as I was, you know, coming up on my contract, and I always wanted to, and this is something I used to tell people when they say, well, how did you play for so long? Well, not only I was durable, I was good, but the fact is that I never priced myself out of the market. I was okay with making what they were going to give me and a little bit more here and there. But my point is that, you know, is these other guys, when they get these big contracts, when it comes down to trimming the fat, you got to start thinking about what's going to happen to you. So I'm telling you, guys that are high-priced players on every team at this point in time, they're looking at themselves going, you know what, honey? We may not be here this year. We better start looking. Maybe we might be going somewhere else because they're going to trim some fat somewhere because of that cap, because that's the almighty cap. And, you know, you just hope that it can go up a little bit to save maybe somebody's job. That's usually what it comes down to.
All right, boys. Good stuff today. Fun
talk. Thank you, Lance. Thank you, John.
Absolutely.
Tune in tomorrow for another episode of Big Blue Kickoff 5. It's Lance, Paul, and I. We'll dive into the tight end position a little bit and talk. I'm sure we'll have more about Kyle Pitts. So actually, it's good. Jeff got to say his big Kyle Pitts spiel today. So he's not on the show tomorrow. So we'll do a little bit the tight end position tomorrow. And, of course, take your calls at 973-667-1960. Big Blue Kickoff 5 was presented by the new X series of scratch-offs from the New York Lottery. Now you can multiply your winnings up to 200 times. Please play responsibly. Big Blue Kickoff 5 is part of the Giants Podcast Network, which you could find on Giants.com/podcast, your Giants mobile app, and all your favorite podcast platforms. It's all presented by Investors Bank. For Meadow, for Feagles, I'm Schmelk. Survive the snow. We'll see you tomorrow at noon for another edition of Big Blue Kickoff 5 on Giants.com. Stay safe out there, everyone.